Hello and welcome back to Safe Space, the official Safe in Our World podcast. For those who don't know, the main goal of Safe in Our World is to create and foster worldwide mental health awareness within the games industry. My name is Rosie and today I'm joined by Sarah from Safe in Our World and the lovely Dom Shaw, who runs the Raise the Game program at Yuki. Dom's also an Autistic of Play ambassador and has recently been placed in the Game Awards Future Class of 2021, which is amazing and so well deserved. So congratulations, Dom.
You're making me blush.
Well done.
I'm literally, like,
amazing.
I was myself, like, oh, I hope they haven't heard. And then it's like, yep, you have heard. Ah.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was so glad to see your face on there. There were so many people that it was nice to recognize. So yeah, well done.
Thank you. And I must say, I am looking forward to actually like being, I think like they did it like last year's Future Class, they did it last year where they put the people's photos on this big screen. So to actually be on the big, potentially be on the big screen during the actual second, if not first, biggest game award show. Woo! It's like fantastic.
That's so exciting. Yay. When is the Games Awards? I will definitely tune in.
I think it's either for us in the early mornings of the 10th or it's tonight. I can't remember which.
By the time this has gone out, it will have already happened, so we'll be able to.
I'll be like, oh look, I was on like this second. I was like between.
Should do a live reaction or something.
Just make a TikTok just for that reaction. Just be like,
please do. I would love to see that. Oh, amazing. So do you want to like tell us a little bit about yourself or for those listening who might not know much about you? Because obviously we know you and we have the delight of talking to you regularly, which is great.
No, absolutely. So hi, everyone that's listening. My name is Dom Shaw or Dominic Shaw by my birth name, but I don't mind either. And I think it's easier because obviously when it comes to my email, it's like Dom at Yuki. So it's just like, just call me Dom. Just call me Dom. But I am Yuki's Equality, Diversity and Inclusion /EDI coordinator. And one of my main projects is to manage the Raise the Game Pledge initiative, which thankfully and amazingly Safe in Our World is a part of as a supporter, which means, you know, from my end, it's all about how do we encourage and empower their work and how do we amplify it through our networks, which is fantastic, especially, you know, over the last year, the success of the community manager training has really impacted our senior manager team who really want to do more with Safe in Our World in the new year around training. So I'm happy to encourage those conversations internally and get that to happen more. And again, there's so much more to come. But before I get ahead of myself, I'm also an ambassador for Autistica, who are the UK's leading autism research charity. So I'm specifically one of their Autistica Play ambassadors. So I specifically promote and highlight their work around video games and the research and activities they do around it. We currently, as we're recording this, Autistica is a part of the Jingle Jam 2021, which is fantastic. We've already earned over 150k, which
That's
is
amazing.
Just like bloody crazy. And I have to do obviously a massive shout out to Jake Mackey, who used to be the gaming partnership lead at Autistica, who has now settled down, had a little boy, and gone back to uni to get some animal biology degree.
Oh, amazing! I did zoology as a degree, so I heavily respect that.
It's. I'm really glad that he's kind of like taken that time, but equally, I just wanted to do a massive shout out to him because obviously the whole reason that Autistica is on the Jingle Jam is because of his efforts. And even though he's not with the charity now, he still obviously needs a big shout out. But on top of that, obviously, there's also Bertine and Alice Cooper, who are currently at Autistica, who I've been supporting since Jake left both of them, and they've done a great work as well. So it's been fantastic, but I'm hoping, obviously, we'll talk more about Autistica as well during this episode. But yeah, those are the two main things. And then obviously, as Rosie's already said, I'm now part of the future class. But last year I was also part of the Game Changers by thegamesindustry.biz. And I'm hoping soon they're going to reveal the 2021 list. And fingers crossed. I've already heard that some of the people I've nominated have got accepted, so I'm absolutely looking forward to spreading the good news and highlighting their achievements, because there are so many awesome people, especially on this podcast right now. Two of them are actually away from
me. You're
too
kind.
Too kind, Dom. But that's brilliant. I mean, you're going to need a shelf to go behind you at some point for all these awards that you're going to end up winning.
Oh my god, you know, don't do that. I'm really, it's hard enough to find a shelf for my figures, so let alone awards.
So moving on then, to kind of kick things off, because we ask this of every guest, hit us with your favorite all-time games.
I have to say straight up, and I mean, this is technically almost any time that I'll ask this question, I always give it to everyone. So I don't know whether this is sloppy seconds answer or just smiley face from Dom answer again. But Mass Effect 1 is absolutely, it's the game that changed my life. It's, I literally found it in Blockbusters one day, didn't know anything about it. And also RIP Blockbusters, because even though games can't, like, they have to have the memory put onto the console now, like back in the day when you could just go to Blockbusters and rent a game, like,
I know, that's so cool. How I first rented my first game was a Blockbusters, and it was Scooby-Doo for the PlayStation, and it was terrible, but I had a blast.
See, but that's the thing, like, you didn't have to pay however much Scooby-Doo would have been back in the day. You would have just paid the £3-4.
Exactly.
And then you'd be like, it's a terrible game, I don't want to play this anymore.
You know, I think even though it was terrible, I loved playing it anyway, because it was the first one I rented. And so I was like, you know what, I need to make the most of this. This is a big moment for me.
And well, I'm glad the joy of renting was a big moment. But I don't know if I ever played that one. But nevertheless, so... I literally picked up Mass Effect one day, put it into my 360, and ended up going 200 hours later in a week playing it.
In a week? Amazing.
Yeah, like, I literally, so I rented it, I think it was either the Friday or the Saturday, and I literally, because I was a bit of a little devil, I was able to convince my mum to let me have days off. So I definitely had days off to play Mass Effect.
Don't do that at home, kids.
Learn from my mistakes, please. It's good for your mental health. But in all seriousness, though, it was such a impactful game to me that I had to rent it again, and I did another 200 hours. And this was around 2008. So YouTube had only just, like, it only been in existence for, I think, 2 to 3 years by that point. So it wasn't where it is today, where you could find almost any video. But, like, I went searching on YouTube for Mass Effect, and I found this video called Sci-Fest Fi, which was a documentary of its behind the scenes. And someone in it said that you could get a career in video games. And I was just like, what? Since 2008, I've been on a journey. Anyway, I'm happy to say I have a foot in the industry. That could change.
Do.
I could just have been lifted off by gravity, and I'm like, no, my foot is lost.
No, but, foot.
Yeah,
that is definitely one of the games. Probably there are quite a few, so I'll limit it to two more. So, Batman Arkham Asylum.
Okay.
Absolutely love the game. I mean, I think it's like when someone says, I respect what they did in the game, I absolutely respect Arkham Asylum. It not only, firstly, was the first decent Batman game. No offense to the previous developers. Really Batman game before.
No offense, but Major Shade was just thrown over.
But what I loved about it is that you did feel like Batman, especially as someone who grew up with the animated series. The fact that they brought back Mark Hamill and Kevin Conroy was just like, oh my gosh. And it, you know, it fundamentally changed third person combat for the industry forever, because you know, since Arkham Asylum, pretty much every game tries to either emulate or use their system, because it was the first system that actually made you feel like, I'm not just doing the same punch every time, I'm actually like the body moves and you know, the different motions. It's really that sense of animation within the combat system that made it feel like this is something special. And obviously everyone else saw that too, which was great. And then I'm going to go with Pokemon in general, because to say, well, I'll specifically, if I have to choose one, I'll be like Pokemon Ruby, because it was the first proper Pokemon game I owned. And even to this day, I absolutely love Pokemon. I mean, I just literally bought a Switch. I bought Ring Fit with the Switch.
Oh my God, how is it? I've still not tried Ring Fit.
I've not yet. I'm trying to find space in my place to actually do it, because obviously I've heard that if you squeeze yourself in, you'll be in danger of hurting yourself. So I'm like, I better listen to that. I'm definitely going to use it because I absolutely love what I've heard about it. But I've equally bought Pokemon Sword, even though I've watched it and seen, and I know it's not the best Pokemon game. I am too much of a lover. I've been waiting for a UK region in Pokemon for too long, so I was just like, I'm getting Sword. But I got the new Brilliant Pearl as well. But yeah, the fact that I'm buying the game still, and I've got like Sun and Moon, and well, I've got Sun, and then I've got Ultra Moon, and all these, you know, Y, and etc. The fact that Pokemon keeps bringing me in, it's just fantastic. But I will do one last shout out to the Kingdom Hearts series, because it's one of those series that I actually never played until Kingdom Hearts 3, but I watched completely and utterly on YouTube, and I absolutely love the story, even though, again, there's a lot of controversy because people are like, the story makes no sense, it's completely convoluted, and it's like, no, you just have to like look deeper into the story, and it's amazing. But
yeah, just go with it.
Exactly. And when I got Kingdom Hearts 3, it was like, it was, I think from a general perspective, if I didn't love the franchise as much as I do, it would probably be more average. But because obviously I love Kingdom Hearts, I was just like, I have to give an honourable shout-out to Kingdom Hearts 3 being my first entry into the series, and hopefully we'll see more, because I definitely want more Kingdom Hearts.
Oh, I have to admit, I've never played Kingdom Hearts, but I have listened to the soundtrack, which is phenomenal, so.
Oh, Sanctuary, Simple and Clean, they're all great songs.
Yeah, they are very good, so I know, I feel like I really need to up my game, like literally, because there's so many games that I need to play. That a lot of people's childhoods. No, I do though, because there's so many that are in my backlog that I'm desperate to play. Like I never played, Pokemon wasn't a huge part of my childhood, as I know it was for a lot of other people. And so the first Pokemon game that I ever played was Unite, which I really enjoyed.
As well.
I really like Unite, it's a lot of fun. And I've been watching other people play Pokemon, but now I'm like, ah. Oh. I feel like I've missed out on a whole few years of nostalgia.
Well, to be fair, like without it being in your past, you can't really have that sense of nostalgia. However, you can jump on the wagon now with obviously Brilliant Pearl, or you can wait till the new year with Legends of Arceus. I was like, my pronunciation would be terrible for this. Like, you'll get to the point of like capturing it or something, and people will be like, what did he say? And I'll be like, no, your pronunciation. But no, Arceus, it should be again, I'm looking forward to that one as well. But Pokemon Unite, like I'm all about Ninetales and Charizard in that. That's for sure.
Oh, I'm a Zeraora person through and through.
Oh my gosh.
Because I'm just I like just running around, being fast and slashing and then running away. That's my
skills. Now it makes me feel like, I wonder if we've ever played against each other and you've killed me and I'm just like, Zeraora, why?
Oh my god, that's so funny. That actually happened to me the other day. I was looking back because I'm a loser and I screenshot when I do really well. And I screenshotted and I saw someone who I follow on Twitter that was in the game that I had no idea at the time. And I was just like, oh my god, that's really embarrassing. Like, I'm glad you're on my team, but that's so wild that we were playing at the same time and I had no idea who you were.
Oh my gosh. See, that's the beauty of multiplayer at times. It's just those sudden moments of joy, but also that crippling thing where it's like you might have actually been matchmaked with someone that you actually know.
Yeah, and you're no longer friends because of how it went down.
Oh my gosh, I mean, what would be wild is if they're way into YouTube and like they have an account and everything and they're like, this person, I really don't like this person. And then it's like they say, oh, check out my YouTube, I just released a new video, and you check it out and you're like, you read the account name and you're like, I think that's mine.
Yeah, you're like, that's me that they're yelling at, but also like, well done me. If you make someone angry in the game, you're probably doing well, right?
Exactly.
is that an evil thing to say?
I don't think it's an evil. I just think it's a survival thing to say. You know, it's not about evil or good. It's just about survival in the multiplayer.
Exactly. Friends don't exist in Pokemon Unite. You've got to do what you've got to do to win. Yeah.
Exactly. Even though it's all about uniting to win.
Yeah. Just ignore that bit. So moving into like your, so you, obviously you said that Mass Effect was a huge inspiration for you to get into the games industry, but do you see a personal relationship with games and your own mental health in your own life, and have you seen the effects of it in any of the communities that you're involved with?
100%. I would say for me, games have always been something of delight and just positivity, you know, like, sometimes it's a sense of escapism, you know, like relating back to when I was at school. It's like I was someone, I mean, that's again, I think, why it was even more impactful on me, because school, I'd literally just go because I was told and then I'd come back and play games. So the fact that a game actually inspired me to actually, you know, build ambitions and actually do better for myself, that's almost the fundamental of a personal, you know, close relationship with games and mental health. Because technically, if I never had that that connection with Mass Effect, who knows what I'd be doing now? I mean, I could be doing a job that I don't really like and be really upset. But I'm lucky to say that actually I discovered that game, that one game that connected with me so much that inspired me. And that's not to say that everyone has to do it and then go, oh, the games industry. But, you know, there might be a game where someone goes, oh my gosh, that's actually related to this relationship I've got currently. And actually, by playing and interacting with the characters within this game, I now know how to take that situation in my real life. Or, again, escapism is probably the most cause, because again, it's like sometimes when you're in a stressful situation and oppression and, you know, etc., you just need to take a step back, and sometimes the best way to do that while also still doing stuff is to play a game. So I absolutely say there are personal relationships for my personal health, but also in general. I mean, the fact that when we think about things that are our favorite things, technically they are always biased things, but the fact that, you know, there is such great communities both in the games industry, like the professionals themselves that play the games, but also the people who are players and not working in the industry, there's so many communities that are positive and actually have games there to help them and live their lives better. Maybe that's directly by playing those games, or, you know, the games work as a elevator to where they want to go. Either that's because they've learned something from the game, or it's given them enough time to reflect or step back. You know, there's so much positive power in video games, and all you've got to really do is look at, like, I would probably say one of the coolest places to see the positive effects of games are Twitch communities. That, you know, like, you know, for example, there's an organization called Rainbow Arcade. It's all about supporting LGBTQ plus streamers, and I would say that would be a perfect example to show the positivities that it has on people's mental health, because, you know, they could stream about anything, but the fact that they choose to do games and games make that community of streamers feel positive and allows them to connect with thousands of individuals, it's like, my gosh, amazing, like, who would have thought that? And that's just one example. Obviously, there's other communities, so apologies not for shouting out any other communities, but I just, like, the Rainbow Arcade came up in my brain first. But there's so many other, you know, not just Twitch, you know, YouTube communities or just other in-person communities. I mean, you know, like, we're starting to see other kind of really nice communities popping up. So, for example, the University of Roehampton, they have an esports lab where people can go and play the games that are often in the esports circuits or develop their skills around esports. And what they've done, which is really nice, is they've created a women and marginalized gendered only night to give people safe space to play the games.
Oh, brilliant.
So there's, like, you know, there's all these activities happening. And of course, you know, that's not to deny that there are negatives, but when I think it's much harder to find the positives, and actually there are a lot of positives, it's just people just don't see them, and it's like, actually, if we can promote and highlight these positives more, I think it's just going to be much, much more easier to go, yes, games are great for our mental health.
Yeah, that's amazing. I've got a question, Dom. You've already said what inspired you to get into the industry, but how did you actually go about getting in the industry, and how, you know, what's your view of the industry? How has it treated you?
So this is definitely an interesting question, because it's like, kind of the Mass Effect stuff was part one. So obviously, going forward from that, I obviously went through school, made sure to get good grades. I mean, I got awarded originally when I took IT, which at the time, like, I'd probably say you might not need IT as a grade to get through to a games course now, but at the time, like, when I was looking at colleges and I wanted to get onto a games course, they were like, you need IT. And at the time, I was like, E grade. So I worked really hard to up it, and actually, I was awarded the best overall improver, because I went from an E to a B grade in IT. So basically, the sense of what I did after that was look where I want to go, and which was to get into the industry. So at the time, the best way for me to see was to go to college and then to go to university. So I got the grades I needed, and at the time we were doing GCSEs. I don't really know what they do now, which is why I'm a bit like, I don't know what they do, but you get the grades. And then I did college, which is where I gained a lot of my fundamental knowledge. You know, like, we had a module about game hardware and, you know, how it mixes with the rest of the media landscape. So completing college, and then I went to university where I was able to get more of my hands-on experience. So college was much more of the knowledge, and university was much more hands-on. I mean, there's no other way to say it in a kind way, because, like, when we first got onto my uni course, they were basically like, oh, hey, you don't know any of these people that you've just met, but we're going to put you in teams and you're going to make a game together. And you're just like, what? And, you know, an experience like that first as a student, you're like, this is crazy. But actually, it's a fundamental skill in the games industry, because actually, when you start a company, you're very, very unlikely to know anyone. And actually, you need to be able to work together, find compromises, and create creative and amazing products together. So uni really gave me that kind of hands-on experience. And although I would never repeat uni, I absolutely loved the experience because of the people that I did my course with and just the work I was able to do during uni. And once I got to graduation, obviously this is where the challenge came in, where at the time, you know, the kind of atmosphere and the kind of encouragement was that, oh, you complete uni, you can go straight to a job. But it wasn't as easy as that. And even today, I know it's definitely not easy. So I after I graduated and had some time off to just chill after completing 3 years of full-time study, I was just like, okay, now I'm going to try and look for... what at the time I was looking for was a junior producer session because, you know, during college I wanted to be a games designer, but actually when we came to uni and I did that unit where we had to work together with people, I actually realised I have a real love of organising things and actually talking to people and managing people. So when I left uni, I was like, I'm going to be a junior producer. But unfortunately, it's definitely a lot better now. Like, there's loads more junior producer opportunities in the industry currently. But at the time, there wasn't. So I was kind of, you know, not dead in the water, but I was kind of like, oh, where am I going to go? I need to find a boat or some land. So I was just like... trying to look, and fortunately, during my time at university, I'd volunteered at Develop Brighton, so I was one of their red shirts. And during my time of doing that, which is crazy to think now, but I met my current CEO, Dr. Joe Twist, at Develop. So I actually was one of the red shirts in a session she chaired around women in games. And I was so fascinated because I was very much a naive, sheltered boy who never thought actually women could get into the games industry. And that's not to say because of prior knowledge. That was just because for me, before university, I never actually knew many people who played games. So the fact that actually it wasn't just for me, it was actually, there was a whole range of different people from all sorts of backgrounds that love games. I was just so fascinated by, and it kind of was like a jump for joy just to know that other people actually played games. So the session that Joe chaired was really amazing to me. And ever since that session, which was in 2013, I'd obviously tried to keep connected to Joe and, you know, network where I can. So coming forward back into the story, Joe was like, oh, you're still trying to find a job? I'll introduce you to some people. And one of the people she introduced me to offered me an internship, which I was very excited for at the time. But obviously looking back, just to be as transparent as possible, that was definitely a toxic opportunity because I ended up doing 5 months unpaid. And when I did get paid, it underpaid me £600 and used my age to determine that reason, which wasn't a great thing. And then
that sounds awful.
I mean, and as well, they made me redundant later in that year. And I was at the time not aware of my rights as an employee and the legal stuff. So when they said, oh, we're putting you on garden leave, I didn't really know the sense of what garden leave was at the time. So I said to them, oh, I can do this last month of work, but could you write me a reference and introduce me to some people? And they were just like, yeah, yeah. And then I did that month's work for them, and they never did me a reference or connected with me with anyone. And now, obviously, looking back, I would have been like to my younger self, like, don't be that naive. Just go and look for a new job.
So easy to say that in hindsight, but it's really difficult to do that when you're in the moment, especially exactly. If you care about what you're doing.
So it was not a great thing. And then in between, that was around 2016. And luckily for me, Joe at the time needed an admin assistant for Yuki. So luckily I didn't I found a new boat in temporary work at Yuki. which was before obviously my time now, which is, I think it's all about, like, I mean, there's several points I can bring up, but in terms of that first boat with Yuki, it's all about timing. And I think for me, although it was a temporary boat then, it wasn't the right time for me to stay because there was just no position available. So I was really grateful to get the chance to actually have some temp work and get some pay. But after the 2016, once we went, you know, into the new year 2017, I kind of floated about doing odds. I did events, biz dev, QA, and it wasn't until 2019 where, again, another really toxic opportunity came up, which at first I thought was going to be a really good opportunity because they were like, you'll be our head of events and marketing. And I was like, oh, amazing. But actually, what they really wanted me to do was just do cold calls to companies and be like, you should use our services, which wasn't really great. And what was worse is that I commuted. Like, I asked for relocation support, and they said yes, they would, but they never did. And they were based in, I won't be specific, but they were based in the Bedford area, which is a 10-hour commute away from me. So I had to work for them because they wanted me in the office, which, again, this was before lockdown. They wanted me in the office pretty much every day.
So a 10-hour commute?
Yeah, so 5 hours there, 5 hours back.
Oh, my God. How did that even work?
I had to wake up at 4 a.m. in the morning, get there just before 9, half 9. Then I worked until 6 and then commuted back and got back home around 11. And then obviously only had about 4 hours sleep.
My goodness. Wow. So fair to say your first step into the industry wasn't brilliant.
And this is where I want to then switch it around because that opportunity came to an end, again, in a toxic way, because I had told them, you know, I'm not someone who can do back-to-back meetings. It's not really good for my, you know, like I said to them specifically, like, I get really anxious and, you know, with my autism, it doesn't really do me good. And unfortunately, they decided to use that against me. So they not only had me go into back-to-back meetings on my last day, but they also then accused me of misgross conduct, which they never gave me a proper reason for. They were just like, "Oh, you've done gross misconduct, so we're firing you," and that was to avoid giving me a week's notice. And then they walked me out of the office like if I was a criminal, and I got into, like, I ordered a taxi and got in it and to the train station, and I was just like, I think I've been fired, because obviously my brain had just been processing all that back-to-back meetings and all that talking, and it wasn't until I actually got into the taxi to go to the station, I was just like, huh, I think this has just happened. So again, it was almost like, again, I think it was a very bad situation. But then, just before leaving, a certain charity by the name of Autistica announced that they were going to do their first ever video game activity, which luckily I'd booked a ticket for just before getting fired. So I'd already set aside some money to go to this activity, and it was at the BFI Southwick Centre. And my gosh, like, to go from such a negative experience to then go to the Autistica event and actually feel welcomed, actually have a quiet space, and just feel absolutely, like, overwhelmed with kindness and inclusion. I instantly was just, like, super happy, but I also was like, can I be an ambassador for you? And they were like, yes.
So is that how really you got involved in the EDI? That you're so involved in now and, you know, leading the way with your...
I would absolutely say, I really hope I don't make too many people upset from hearing all that stuff. And I mean, I definitely did, like, try to breeze over it, because I think it's vital for me to say some of that, because, again, there is toxicity and there is negativity in our industry, but this is where the beauty of inclusion comes in, because as soon as, you know, I found out about Autistica and they said, yes, be an ambassador, I absolutely delved into that. So I started to go to events with them. Oakland, I was a volunteer, but they paid for my travel. They made me feel welcome. They actually gave me opportunities to talk at events. So one event that I talked at was the Best Places to Work Awards 2019. So I gave a talk all about what companies can do for people with autism. And what was a really magical moment for me in that was that I told the audience, like, middle of my talk about flapping, which is, like, instead of clapping, where obviously you're making noise, for a lot of people with hearing sensitivity on the spectrum, you just, like, you put your arms in the air and wave them about, and that's flapping. And obviously I didn't say to people do it, but actually when I finished my talk, everyone clapped, and I was just like, I felt heard and I felt valued, and I was just like, this is amazing.
So I did full-time
volunteering for Autistica from May 2019 all the way up to the end of the year, which is then where, again, Yuki, I think, again, where right timing came in, because Ryuki was in at the moment to really, like, accept me, because obviously, like, I'd had to grow and develop myself, but also Yuki had been developing. And as of November 2019, early December, because that's when they had their Christmas party. But basically, during their Christmas party in 2019, they were like, do you want to be our maternity cover for Office Manager? And I was like, yes. And, you know, but to cut the short story short, obviously, I got into that role for about 2 to 3 months. And then lockdown happened, and it was like, oh no! But luckily, I was then presented the opportunity to manage the EDI. And obviously, with all the experiences as I've highlighted, I not only had the live experience of myself, so, you know, like being autistic, being dyslexic, I'm also, I identify as LGBTQ+, and I come from a single parent home, so social mobility was also something that I was very aware of. I had all this lived experience, but I also had this passion for it because of the negativities that I'd faced. And actually, you know, to be given the opportunity to be able to go, actually, it's your job to encourage and empower people to feel included, but also to know that they have a voice, and that actually, as an industry, we should be more positive. I was just like, yes. Ever since, I've taken up that role, and obviously, I did it so well. Yuki was like, we're going to invest in you. We're going to make you our EDI coordinator this time last year. And obviously, I've got to work with amazing individuals like yourselves. You know, again, big shout out to Saving Our World, even though it's on their own podcast.
Dom, do you think the industry is listening? Do you think they're getting on board with this now and making the changes that are so clearly necessary?
I think there's still room to improve, but I would absolutely say that there are much more people listening compared to 2 years ago. Because, you know, I think the work I do for Raise the Game is evident of that. You know, the fact that when I originally took on the Raise the Game pledge, and obviously lockdown happened, a lot of companies were like, oh, we're going to shut our doors down to everything, we need to survive. And at the time, we only had about 23 partners. So to actually not only survive lockdown, because, you know, in a worst case scenario, we could have not grown Raise the Game, and actually we could have been cancelled, and, you know, that, again, worst case scenario, but actually we were able to positively move it forward to the point that now, as of December 2021, which is just a year, nearly 2 years later, we've got 190 plus partners and supporters. Wow. And, you know, they're all at different points of their journeys, but equally they're all caring, they're all prioritizing that work. And I have chats with other companies every day, like, or organizations every day, about, oh, we want to do this, how can we support? And it's not just a matter of me, like, going, oh, I'm going to help you do this. It's also a matter of signposting, you know, like, again, this is why supporters like you guys are so vital, because actually I'm just one person, and it's actually about community. It's about knowledge sharing and coming together. So the fact that I can, when someone's like, I need help with mental health resources, I can just go, you know what? I've got these amazing people called the Safe in Our World team who are going to be absolutely what you need. Go talk to them. Let me do an introduction, or here's their emails. Yeah, and the fact that that happens, like, that's what's the beauty of it. It's not just on one person's shoulders. It's a united front. And I think, obviously, there are still, you know, we want more people part of that voice. But I think as we keep growing that voice and creating that momentum, that's going to be so vital. And, you know, that's not just about retaining talent. It's also about getting talent in, because obviously the original point of your question was, how can people get into the industry? And like, looking at it now, because people are so much more inclusive, people don't have to go just solely to uni now. They can take up internships, they can take up apprenticeships, they can take up mentorships that might give them opportunities. And although that may not sound inclusive at the, you know, like from a straight up just summary approach, actually the fact that the industry has developed all these ways that people can get in and cater to their learning styles and how they want to interact with the industry, that is inclusive, because we're taking down barriers and ensuring that people can actually gain more access to the industry and be more included. And that is, you know, again, more work to be done, because I mean, the work, like, for example, the work on apprenticeships has only just begun, and there's so much more that can be done with it. Shout out to InterGames, who are doing some of that work, which, again, hopefully people will know of them, or at least type them into Google if they don't know. But again, I just, anytime I get to shout out about partners, I will.
Yeah, we're working with them as well. They do amazing work, so.
But, yeah, you know, like, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, there's more ways to get into this industry. And I think I would hope to say that even though there are negatives, I hope people can see that there's actually a lot of positives, and it's all about connecting with the right people. Because, like, for example, I connected with Joe at a really young age, and actually Joe has been my most solid contact, as in, like, from when I began my journey to now, because I've always had Joe then. Obviously, now I'm at Yuki. You know, Joe's my boss, so it kind of works out. But equally, it's all about hard work and passion, because, you know, people, this is not like public service. It's not like ambulances and, you know, nurses, doctors, where those will always be in demand because we always need them. However, video games have the opportunity of driving through passion, driving through innovation, that even though we're a private industry, it doesn't mean we need to stay private, as in, you know, the definition of private, but actually we can make sure it's accessible, opening, inclusive, and open ourselves to opportunities, because there are so many different opportunities. And again, I've got a whole list of pledge partners and supporters that are showing how these opportunities can work in games. With Gina Jackson, OBE, who's amazing, and obviously a friend of Safe in Our World. And, you know, what I loved about the opportunities that she created through the bootcamp was it highlighted that actually someone doesn't have to love playing games to get a career in games. You know, they can have a passion for the job they have, they can have a passion for the industry, or they can have a passion for the career that they want to map out for themselves. And regardless, as long as they have passion for one of those things, which is, again, a very inclusive way of seeing it, because if they're passionate about the industry, they're obviously going to want to see the industry grow. If they're passionate about their role, they're obviously going to want to do the best in their role. And if they're passionate about their career, obviously they're going to want to make sure everyone around them is happy and positive. So regardless of someone's background, as long as they have a passion and a hard work ethic, there is just only success and positivities that we can gain for the industry. And again, we gain people from all different backgrounds in that approach. You know, like, some of the people I met through the bootcamp, I absolutely can't wait to see them be cherished, be nurtured, and blossom into gaming professionals.
Yeah, I do think recruitment in the industry has changed. And where it used to be quite narrow for the sort of people background education that companies were looking for, I do think they've widened that now, and they do understand they want people with lived experience. We want people from different backgrounds and just sort of recruit as widely as possible. And, you know, I agree. I do think that's changing. And I do think there are many more opportunities that will come up for people to join the industry. And those, yeah, the boot camps, the uni work that goes on, I think is brilliant to make it as accessible for people as possible. So, yeah, I think
100%
we're going in the right direction.
And also, I think people are starting to become more aware of the issues within the industry and are working to make sure that they do support people who are more ethical and who are more inclusive within their games and how they work, because it is being noticed and it is blowing up in the news about bad practice.
Yeah.
And what's even better is because of those stories, it really helps us think, how do we retain such amazing talent? And actually we go and we're starting to go beyond, you know, like, because again, this is why I say over the last 2 to 3 years, that's where we've really seen the change in EDI. Because actually before that, people would mostly be lip servicing and PR statements and tick lists. But now people are like, actually, how can I make people feel happy? And how can I pivot to different people's needs? And actually, it's all about equity and, you know, thinking, how can I make everyone feel equal opportunity, but also cater to their personal needs, retain them, make them feel included? And how do I make sure that their merits and their expertise are being valued rather than insert diversity? And I know it's a bit ironic to say expertise and merit before diversity, but that's the thing. Like, by making people feel valued for who they are because of, you know, what they know, their lived experience and so on, rather than being, oh, you fill in this quota for us. It's like,
exactly,
you know, it makes them feel happy and thus supports their well-being, mental health, and makes them want to do more. And in general, I think, you know, again, there are still more companies that need to learn this, but actually by building EDI into your company rather than having it as an add-on, you're going to see so much more value. Because if you, like, for example, build accessibility into your games, you're opening yourself up to, I think the official number was 1,050k alone, just in the UK, 150k people who have a disability who want to play games, but because of their disability are limited to. And actually, if you think about accessibility, like, by just making that investment at the start of a game and actually building that into your game from the pre-production all the way to the end, you're not only still keeping the audiences you still get, but actually you're gaining 150k extra revenue depending on the cost of your game. So that's, again, a business profit, but also an inclusion profit, because you're actually making more people feel included and actually their voices are heard because they want to play your games.
Exactly. So you're not losing anything from making it accessible to more people. You're only making it accessible. That's a great win.
Exactly. There's just so much buy-in. And I think what's one of the things that we've got to do going forward for around the EDI work is just how we present it to different people. Because obviously, you know, there's the saying of preaching to the choir, and there's a lot of people that obviously just see the good work. And obviously it's always good to hear the good work, because obviously you want to keep hearing, oh, this is great. But equally, it's about getting those people who aren't interested. And that's the question. Like, how do we show these people, actually, this is the great work, but put it into a language or a format that they understand and actually makes the light bulb go off in their head and go, oh, actually, I should consider this.
Exactly. Could not agree more. I wanted to touch as well on Autistica. I know we've mentioned it a few times already, which is great, but I would love it if you could expand on a little bit about what work that they do and why it's so important.
Absolutely. I mean, from, you know, just from my personal experience, the way they've made me feel, even though they are a research charity, because of the ways they've engaged with people with autism and the greater community around video games and, I would say, academia slash research, because that's probably the easiest way to say it. But the fact that they've, you know, they have a real sense of, actually, this is how you get people involved, this is how you make them feel included. That, for me, from a lived experience perspective, is what's great. But equally, I think from a general perspective, again, they are one of the biggest voices within the research world around autism, which makes them, you know, it puts a pressure on their expertise, but it also puts a lot of positives, because it means that they're being heard, they're being valued, and, you know, there are ways to go. And I think very recently, Autistica announced their goals for the next decade, their 2030 goals. And I must say, I'm really happy to see them announced and see what they're aiming to do through their research and working with partners to achieve. So obviously I won't go into the greatest details of them, but from the top of my head, you know, they want to be able to, by 2030, be able to provide all autistic people support from day one. So that's not just, you know, when they're at the GP getting supported correctly, but also when they're, when people are seeking diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Yay, I said it. Hopefully I said it right. But
no, you did. You nailed it.
Yay. It's such a hard word for me to say, but they want to be able to help people get better diagnosis and really, you know, because there's currently within autistic communities, there is a real, you know, there's a real delay in actually getting that official statement and highlighting whether what form of autism and all the factors around individuals' autism. Because, you know, a lot of people don't realize that autism isn't just like insert here traits. It's actually very individualized and everyone is quite different. There are common traits, but it's actually very different. So the fact that Autistica, as one of their 2030 goals, wants to ensure people are getting the right support from day one is fantastic. Yep. They want to increase the employment rate for autistic people from what it currently is, which isn't great. It's like 16% of over 500K or 500,000 people in the UK. So 16% of that as the number of how many autistic people are in jobs. Like, that's not a great number. So the fact that they want to double it is amazing. They also want to ensure there is better treatments for anxiety and mental health for autistic individuals, which is fantastic. They want to ensure public spaces are more accessible to neurodivergent people. And that's not just, you know, people with autism, that's people with ADHD, Tourette's. So to actually support the greater community of neurodiversity, again, is something that I love about Autistica, because they're not just going, oh, we're going to just do our goals and that's it. They actually think about the bigger picture and actually help.
Yeah, it's amazing.
And I'd probably say, obviously, the other last two goals is obviously they want to ensure health checks in adults with autism is better, because, again, you know, when we think of diagnosis, like, the biggest problem there is women's diagnoses, because actually there's quite a big difference between how men portray autism and how women portray autism, or marginalized genders as well, because you know, for example, a lot of people can mask their autism, which is like a common trait, but it's also quite hard, because actually it's like if they're masking themselves and they can't control that factor. But because of that, people are like, oh, well, I didn't think. And it's like, well, maybe you should think, because there are signs. And yeah, the fact that Autistica want to support that process of making sure people get better health checks and actually have it more holistically is great. And just overall change the attitude of people in general to think, actually, autism isn't this or that. Autism is just people with differences that just need a bit more equity thinking to it, you know, thinking of how can I support this, but equally treat them as any other person. Like, and I think that's what I love about the word. Obviously, equity also means like the financial world stuff, but I love the EDI definition of equity.
That, yeah, me too.
Like equal opportunities, but also ensuring people get the right support they need to get to that equal opportunity state.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I love that. I mean, they're doing fantastic work, and I'm so glad that we were able to talk to you about them. And I will put their link in the description of the podcast as well, because you should definitely go and check them out.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, what's really amazing with one of those goals around the, you know, the anxiety is that I definitely know with talking with them, they're going to want to do more around mental health. So there's, again, more opportunity in the future for collaborations, partnerships, and just working together.
Yeah. Wonderful. I mean, thank you for your help in the resource that we put together on neurodiversity for our Level Up partners. So that was so useful to have your insight and background, Dom. So thank you for that.
No problem.
Maybe circle back to a conversation earlier. And if you had some parting wisdom to anybody starting to explore their own mental health in games, what would be your advice?
I would say kind of that step back and have a deep dive / research is probably my number one advice, because regardless of what stage I've been at, so for example, if I'm using a game for escapism, you know, I'm always thinking, even though while I'm playing it, in my head, obviously, I'm always like, well, why do I feel so down? Or why do I feel so grumpy today? And actually, through playing the game, you kind of almost, you make that metaphorical step forward to go, actually, it was because someone said this to me, etc. So, not to go on too much of a tangent, basically, I would always take a step back, and either if you haven't got a game at hand, obviously research and just look into like why would I feel moody because of this? Because even though Google might not give the right answer every time, it can give it a lot of the time. But equally, when you do have a video game in front of you, it's also a great time to kind of use it as an outlet to stress relief and actually think about and reflect on your mental health. And actually, I would probably say that's the more effective way. So I'd probably say I'd give 70% play a video game so you can step back and reflect. But if you're out or don't have access to a video game at the time, always, you know, just get your phone out and just look, like type in, why do I feel moody because of this? Or, you know,
it makes sense though, because it's like even just reflecting how games make you feel that you already play, it can be a great indicator of what you might go to if you're not having a great day.
Exactly. And I just think, yeah, that space to reflect, but not make it like, because obviously there's lots of intense moments in life, and yeah, to force your, to like, if you were just sitting there and you were like, I'm going to think, how am I going to reflect on me? It's kind of, it always puts pressure on you, and it's kind of like, it blocks you from actually properly reflecting. So actually having an outlet to use to reflect through, like, for example, playing a video game, or even, like, again, using my Kingdom Hearts example, watching the story of a video game online, like, whichever regardless you do, it really helps. And yeah, it actually gives you time to relax, gives you time to think and reflect, how, you know, why is this? And actually, generally, either the game or whatever you're doing will result in you feeling happy and you forgetting it, or it will result in you wanting to take action, either through talking to, you know, if you've had a problem with someone, talking to that person, or if you've been a bit grumpy because of that, you'll do this in response, you know.
Yeah, it often might put you in a better mindset to be able to deal with the problems at hand as well, because it's really hard. If you have an issue that you're really stressed about and you don't do anything to counteract that stress and make decisions whilst you're stressed, they're not always likely to be the best decisions that you could have possibly made. It's kind of like that saying, like, don't make decisions reeling from a loss or whatever. Like, it's, I guess it's kind of the same thing.
100%.
No, I totally agree. I think it's so important to be able to reflect, and using games as a medium to do that is great, because it might not even be a conscious effort that you're doing it. It's just putting you in a different state of mind where you can think things through without knowing you're thinking about them. You know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And that just makes me now, like, as you were saying that, I was just thinking, imagining that advice, like, you know, like Zelda pulls out items out of the chest. Just imagine all of what we just said coming out of the chest, and it's just like, whoa, that's going to be a lot. So I guess for anyone who wants a simple tagline of my wisdom words, basically, use games to stress relief and reflect in, so that you can thus take space and give yourself time to properly reflect and thus take action accordingly, and not just block it away or ignore it.
Perfect. I love it. Yeah. Thanks so much, Dom. It's honestly, it's been an absolute blast having you on. We always love talking to you because
you're just such an inspiration, Dom.
Right? Yeah.
Stop it. You're the inspiration.
I love
being on this episode. So I absolutely will make it publicly known. Thank you for letting me come on and chat to you. And again, I absolutely always love chatting. I mean, you know, I bugged you during Develop Right. Even when you were tired, it was just like, hello, guys. And you're like, no, Dom.
You could never bug us. Don't be daft. We were just like... living on caffeine at that point, but that was fine.
I did actually, like, from a scientist approach, I was just like, the effects of caffeine can keep people stable this long.
Bad conference coffee as well, but it was
It was like the instant stuff that you're
luckily
like,
you're not sponsored by the conference, otherwise that would be like
No, but if any good coffee company does want to sponsor the podcast, please get in touch because I would love that.
Oh my gosh, that would be amazing. Yeah. So every time the podcast comes on, you just have this like smooth voice ad and just like, get this, I don't know, mental free coffee.
You heard it here first. If that's your marketing plan, please drop us an email. Thank you so much, Dom. It's been a pleasure. And to those listening, if you're struggling, please know that you're not alone. There's a lot of support out there. We've talked about a lot of different support today, including Autistica. But if you're looking for somewhere to start, please do visit our website at safeinourworld.org, and there will be a list of global helplines as well as a lot of information about feelings and symptoms and games and everything in between. So head over there if you need any support. But thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Safe Space, and we will see you next time.